Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hey, everybody. It's still a really, really exciting time of the year for sports. And without a doubt, people are going to be looking to get in on the action. We have the best place for you to go. MyBookie, if you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. MyBookie has more lines and better odds for the player than any other sports book around. And if you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000 right now, you'll get an extra grand in free money to play with. All you have to do is use our promo code BLV, that's capital BLV, to activate the offer. Once again, that promo code is capital BLV to get your extra cash from MyBookie. Bet, win, get paid, MyBookie. Today is Friday, February 21st, 2020. Rob Manfred is making headlines this week in Major League Baseball. He's been talking with the media in both Florida and Arizona this past week as part of his annual press conferences for both the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League for spring training. He talked about the Field of Dreams game, which is going to take place in August, which I personally cannot wait for. That'll be between the New York Yankees and the Chicago White Sox. He talked about some pace of play topics, like possibly a dynamic strike zone, though we'd still be ways away from that happening. But the concept is quite intriguing. I think it was Nick Elam's idea, one of many Nick Elam ideas to save the play of sports, or save the pace of play in sports. But most importantly, and probably the most interesting part of Rob Manfred's press conferences this past week, is when he was discussing the Houston Astros and their sign-stealing scandal and their lack of punishment, quite frankly. So he referred to the World Series trophy as a quote-unquote a piece of metal on Sunday, trying to get a rhetorical point across during his presser in Florida. He would then apologize to the media about those comments in Arizona on Wednesday, saying the comments were disrespectful, and they kind of were. He also stated that in an ideal world, and this was, I think, last week, that the Houston Astros players would have been suspended. But, of course, he had to grant them immunity in order to get the information needed to move on with the investigation. So you do have to understand that aspect of it. We're still waiting to hear word regarding the Boston Red Sox sign-stealing investigation from the 2018 season. It was supposed to conclude last Monday, the 10th, February 10th. Today is February 21st, so that is not the 10th. I guess new info came up, and Rob Manfred said they had to re-interview people, so that doesn't sound particularly good. It doesn't sound great if you're the Boston Red Sox. And speaking of Boston, David Ortiz, he spoke out against Mike Fiers yesterday. He defended Rob Manfred. We'll get to those comments shortly. And I also wanted to discuss the players speaking out against Houston Astros players for their cheating in 2017 and possibly beyond 2018, 2019, because this has never happened in professional sports. Players usually bite their tongues when it comes to underlying scandals and, quite frankly, awkward subjects. They never talk when it comes to anything that the media wants them to talk about. And also, they're always told to keep quiet by their media relations teams. But given how big this has gotten and how many people were affected by it, no one is holding back. Not Cody Bellinger, not Aaron Judge, not Giancarlo Stanton, not even Mike Trout, not even LeBron James of all people. So we'll talk about some of those comments as well as what Carlos Correa had to say regarding everything going down in Houston. He responded heavily to what Cody Bellinger had to say. We've also got the Flashback Friday interview of the week. And since this episode is so heavily tied to the Astros investigation, why not talk to the man that made the first breakdown video of the trash cans being used back in 2017, John Boy. His real name is Jimmy O'Brien. He's the founder of John Boy Media. He's the host of Talking Yanks and Talking Baseball with his buddy Jake Storiel. He's an avid Yankees fan, and that's exactly what we're talking, Yankees baseball. So let's get down to it on episode 162, presented by Belly Up Sports. We're sponsored by TickPick.com. Yes, we are still sponsored by TickPick.com. Go use the promo code OSHOW10, that's capital O-S-H-O-W-10, for $10 off your next order. And if you're into banging weights, eating steaks, and sleeping eights, yes, we are still sponsored by MechaNutritionStore.com. Use the promo code OSHOW20, that's capital O-S-H-O-W-20, for $20 off your next order. Let's talk baseball. Again, it is February 21st, 2020, spring training, rocking and rolling, pitchers and catchers, position players, the party has begun, a lot to get into in 2020. The first thing we want to get into today is Rob Manfred, of course. I think it was Tuesday, it was the second time in 3 days that Rob Manfred met with the media for a press conference that centered around the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal. And unsurprisingly, one of the highlights involved his comments made on Sunday when he referred to the World Series trophy, appropriately named the Commissioner's Trophy, a piece of metal, in an interview with ESPN. He was explaining why he thought stripping the Houston Astros of the 2017 title was a futile act. And here's the full quote, the full quotation from Mr. Rob Manfred. He said, and I quote, "The idea of an asterisk or asking for a piece of metal back seems like a futile act. People will always know something was different about the 2017 season, and whether we made that decision right or wrong, we undertook a thorough investigation, and the intestinal fortitude to share the results of the investigation, even when those results were not very pretty." So Manfred made a point, of course, of apologizing for his off-the-hand remark, if you will, on Tuesday, and that was prior to taking questions for the better part of 30 minutes after that press conference in Arizona. He said, and I quote, "In an effort to make a rhetorical point, I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way. It was a mistake to say what I said." And it was Justin Turner, L.A. Dodgers third baseman. He was among those who took exception to Rob Manfred's comment. He said, and I quote, "For him to devalue it the way he did on Monday just tells me how much out of touch he is with the players in this game. At this point, the only thing devaluing that trophy is that it says commissioner on it." And Rob Manfred was speaking Tuesday afternoon, I think it was, for the Cactus League during spring training in Scottsdale. And his comments on Sunday marked the first time that he held a press conference since the league announced the results of the investigation into the Astros in January. So Rob, of course, confirmed that the Astros used their sign-stealing trash can banging scheme during the 2017 playoffs throughout the division series, the championship series against the Yankees, and then, of course, the World Series against the Dodgers. And he also said that the Astros did, refuting public comments from their players. And while Manfred didn't name names, he did state that the players admitted to partaking in the banging scheme during the playoffs in interviews during the league investigation in which he traded for immunity. He said the garbage can signaling went on in the postseason. There was conflicting evidence on that point. In an investigation, you often have conflicting evidence, and it was my view, the more credible evidence was that they continued to use the scheme in the postseason. And Manfred again discussed MLB's decision to grant Astros players immunity in order to receive honest testimony. He said that they originally approached players and their union with a list of players they'd grant immunity to, but that the union pushed back and demanded full immunity in exchange for cooperation. So essentially here, Rob Manfred is telling the players who are angry with the lack of punishment toward the Astros rosters to blame their union leaders. And Tony Clark, who's the executive director of the players' union, he meets with every team during spring training to start. And on Wednesday, he held his first meeting this spring with players from the New York Mets. And obviously, everyone's going to be asking about this. There are a ton of players unhappy, unsatisfied with the lack of punishment that the Houston Astros have been getting. I mean, the Yankees were cheated out of a World Series in 2017. The Dodgers were cheated out of a World Series title in 2017. And no one's getting punished. I mean, the Astros lost their manager. They lost AJ Hinch. Fine. They lost their general manager. They lost Jeff Luhnow. Okay. They lost a few draft picks. Jim Crane, a billionaire, gets fined $5 million. The Astros players lost nothing. No suspensions, no pay cuts, no forfeiture of the World Series championship they won in 2017. The year Manfred ruled that they had cheated in 2017. And it was also the year where he literally put his foot down after the whole Apple Watch scenario at the Yankees and the Red Sox sign stealing during the summer of 2017. That's when he put his foot down and said, this can't happen anymore, or else there's going to be severe consequences. So wherever a television camera, like we mentioned, has gone this spring, anger has followed. Mike Trout spoke out. Cody Bellinger spoke out. We just listened to Justin Turner, Chris Bryant, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Gary Sanchez, probably with the quote of the year, saying that they could rip his pants off if they win the World or if they go to the World Series. And Tony Clark asks, obviously not for sympathy here, but he is the guy left to explain to every team why Astros players were not punished. I mean, and this was his quote too. The rules of the books with regard to sign stealing clearly lay out that the clubs and club personnel can be disciplined. And before Rob Manfred issued this report, did the union's executive board, who are the elected player leadership, discuss whether players are going to be disciplined in any way? I mean, Clark, this is what Clark said. He said this wasn't a situation where there was a conversation. That's what the rule stated. In order for that consideration to be made going forward, there's going to have to be a change or an amendment to the rules. And Rob Manfred might have explained that in his report, perhaps this way. He said players were granted immunity because we needed their testimony to get the truth and because our rules did not permit player discipline in this area. We look forward to working with the union to strengthen those rules. So instead, over nine pages, in which the word immunity never appeared, not once, but the word transparency did. And Rob Manfred wrote that the Astros players would not be disciplined because it would have been, quote-unquote, difficult and impractical. And, of course, difficult meaning to determine the degree of responsibility among individual players, and impractical because so many of those players by now had joined other teams or retired, for that matter. Brian McCann and Carlos Beltran both gone. Cora went to Boston. Obviously, he's toast. But Tony Clark, again, the executive director of the Players Union, now asked to balance the wishes of Astros players against the wishes of those who hate the Astros, which is everyone except the Astros. So he could survey all the players here, maybe on a secret ballot, about whether the Astros should be stripped of their title or not, because that's the big factor going on right now. If you're not going to suspend them, if you're not going to take a pay cut, if they're not going to suffer in any way, at least take the one thing that they earned, or at least they think they earned in 2017, the World Series title, because it's obvious that what they did affected the outcomes of the games, despite what Jim Crane thinks. And if an overwhelming majority voted yes here, he could challenge Rob Manfred to do it. But why risk fracturing his membership with the collective bargaining set to take place next year when Tony Clark is going to need a unified front more than ever to get that deal done? I mean, better to look ahead now toward preventing another scandal rather than continuing to argue about this one. He said the player voice is here. The player voice here is going to be dictated the best way for us to move forward. He said both in the use of technology on and off the field and with regard to the integrity of the game in general. And what players want, this is what Tony Clark is alluding to, is continued access to video replay rooms during games using customized software that would allow a hitter to review his previous at-bats with video clips, not starting until after the catcher, of course, has flashed the signs going forward. And that said, Tony Clark indicated that players are in favor of limitations on videos. He said, guys want the replay room removed. Guys want to talk about replay in general. Guys want to talk about removal of the live feed, and guys want to talk about removal of cameras, standardization, cameras in each ballpark, and they want to know where each of those cameras are and what each of those cameras do. They also want access to the information
the cameras are providing, both on individual players and as a group. And they want to talk about a form of discipline associated with the particular nuances of this issue. So Rob Manfred, who has said public shaming might discipline the Astros enough for this, which presumes they can be shamed. Jim Crane said that he did not believe he should be held accountable for this. I mean, what a guy. What an owner. Really backing your team here. And this is what he said. He said that the sign stealing might not have had an impact on the games. And Carlos Correa, of course, said the Astros won the World Series, quote-unquote, fair and square. Really? It doesn't matter if you use the signs to your advantage into the 2017 playoffs of the World Series. It doesn't matter if they didn't work, excuse me. It doesn't matter if they didn't work. What matters is that you got there because you had the signs the entire season. That World Series is not fair and square. It's fair and unsquare. I mean, none of those comments, of course, quieted the players. Neither did Rob Manfred dismissing the World Series championship trophy a piece of metal, which was, of course, a comment which he later apologized for. Tony Clark still sounds kind of hoarse on this. I mean, does he believe the anger of the last 2 weeks was a response to what the Astros did by stealing signs or to how Rob Manfred and the Astros have dealt with this whole situation? For what it's worth, this is not going away. I mean, Rob Manfred might think this might plow over in the next few weeks. The Astros are certainly hoping that this is over in the next few weeks. This isn't going away at all this entire 2020 season. I mean, the Red Sox could be in for just as bad. I mean, going forward, I mean, this is just kind of a conspiracy on my end, but the Boston Red Sox sign-stealing investigation was supposed to conclude a week and a half ago, and we still haven't heard word yet because Rob Manfred said that there was some more evidence that has come out to say that they had to re-interview players, which sounds bad as far as I'm concerned regarding the sign-stealing investigation. I mean, did they find something that could be worse than what we had thought? I mean, J.D. Martinez and David Ortiz now seem to be the only two Red Sox affiliates, the only representatives here, that have gone on record saying that they're defending Rob Manfred. They're defending not so much the Houston Astros, but they're saying we got to move on with this. Like, this is nonsense. And, of course, since spring training opened up last week, there have been players left and right, the Bellingers, the Stantons, the Judges, the Trouts, all coming out and saying that they've lost respect for the Houston Astros concerning this sign-stealing investigation. And at Sox camp on Thursday at JetBlue in Fort Myers, Florida, David Ortiz showed up and told reporters that he believes Rob Manfred is catching way too much heat for this. He said the people need to quote-unquote chillax and that Mike Fiers looks like a quote-unquote snitch for going on record with this whole sign-stealing scheme. He said, I'm mad at Fiers. I mean, after you make your money and you get your ring, you decide to talk about it. Why didn't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why didn't you say, I don't want to be a part of this? Now you look like a snitch. And to Mike Fiers' credit, I mean, yes, he didn't do it exactly then and there. He got his ring, Astros 2017 World Champions. 2018 with the A's, when he signed with the A's, he did go on the record saying that this is what was happening in 2017, and baseball kind of swept it under the rug. But last month, Pedro Martinez, another former Red Sox great, called Mike Fiers a bad teammate for blowing the whistle. He said between Pedro and Big Papi here, that's now two Red Sox icons who have ripped Fiers. And coincidentally, or perhaps not, the Red Sox are currently under investigation, like I said, for sign stealing during the 2018 World Series championship season, a ruling that is expected to happen at least in the next few weeks. I think he said February 28th was the deadline on that. And Fiers, of course, waiting until after he won a World Series and left the Astros to speak up is a common complaint. And while it's fair to say that Fiers' motivations here were not entirely noble, better late than ever. He deserves to be commended for this because if he doesn't go on the record, the sign-stealing scheme doesn't become public and Major League Baseball likely takes no action on this. So the sport is obviously in a better shape and a better place here because of Mike Fiers. I mean, AJ Hinch, Jeff Lunau, they were complicit in the sign-stealing scheme, and going to them was presumably a non-option for Mike Fiers. I mean, going to the media, forget about it. I mean, ratting out current teammates for cheating would go over much worse than ratting out former teammates. And realistically, going public after the fact was the only way to do this. I mean, of course, the real problem here is that the Astros cheated. given that Mike Fiers a reason, it gave him a reason to go public in the first place. No sign-stealing scandal, no punishment from MLB, and no blowback from opposing players around the league happened without Mike Fiers blowing the whistle. And David Ortiz, of course, he retired in 2016. I mean, how would he feel if he were on the Red Sox 2017 team that lost to the Astros and the ALDS? I doubt this issue would be with Mike Fiers in this case. So I find it a little bit suspect that both David Ortiz, Pedro Martinez, even JD Martinez have all spoken out against the players in this sense, kind of just saying, yeah, Mike Fiers, you shouldn't have done what you've done, and let's kind of move on from this because we kind of want it to go away. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next week when the Red Sox investigation comes out. Was it worse than what we thought? I mean, what we've been told right now is that all they did was take signs from the video replay room and then use them with a runner on second base, so they could only cheat in this sense with a runner on second base, which has been happening in the league for years. The only thing that's wrong about this is that they used it electronically. They used the video replay room. But I'm starting to think that this might be a lot worse for the Boston Red Sox than people would have thought. So I'm interested to see what happens next week. So and just back to Mike Fiers a little bit, obviously the center of the MLB offseason here as he exploits the Astros. He exposes them for what they truly are, and that's cheaters. He's getting violent threats from people outside of the game. I mean, again, he's the one who blew the whistle on this whole situation. He's now with the Oakland A's. The weird thing is he says he's used to these threats, which is interesting. I don't know if it's blowing the whistle on this, whether it's the sexual abuse charges against him that came out a few weeks after the point. That's none of my business. But he said that he doesn't want extra security. He wasn't offered extra security by MLB, and he said, whatever, I don't care. I've dealt with a lot of death threats before. It's just another thing on my plate. And these comments came 2 days after Manfred spoke to the media in Scottsdale, and he stressed the fact that he would work to ensure the safety of Mike Fiers. And while Mike Fiers could be subject to retaliation by the Astros here, he's trying to, of course, tune it out. He's going to do his best to avoid social media, prepare for the season, yada, yada, yada. He told The Athletic on Wednesday that he doesn't want extra security. I mean, he's like, I said it from the beginning, I'm not away from this. I was part of that team. I was one of those guys. Suspensions, fines, I'm willing to take as much punishment as they do if they ask me to, like even returning the World Series ring. It's not the end of the world. So those comments, I mean, across the league have been open and honest in support of Mike Fiers coming forward. And Manfred himself said he did a service to the baseball industry. And I'm one to say that Mike Fiers, like, is he a snitch? Some players may believe so. But there were teams, there were families, there were just human beings affected by this entire situation with the Astros basically cheating themselves into the 2017 World Series championship trophy. Mike Fiers obviously can't prepare for what's going to happen to him, if anything's going to happen, but he's fully aware of what he did. He was equally a part of that Astros team that cheated in 2017, and he's going to have to pay the price, as well as the Jose Altuves and the Carlos Correas and the George Springers. And that being said, I wanted to get into what Carlos Correa had to say after Cody Bellinger put him on blast, or at least put the Astros on blast, and Jose Altuve saying that he stole an MVP away from Judge. Carlos Correa was probably the only guy when players reported to spring training, when the position players reported, that didn't sound like an absolute robot when apologizing to the media. He was the one that was like, okay, he actually sounds sincere. He's talking like a human being. It's obviously he's speaking from the heart, not from a script that Jim Crane gave him. And this is old news. I feel like anybody following this story has seen this already. It was last Saturday. He probably partook in what was the longest and most insightful interview that any player has participated in so far this spring and spring training. He had an interview with Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, a segment that was on MLB Network. And of course, Rosenthal is the one who published that article on The Athletic, getting Mike Fiers on the record stating that this is what the Astros did in 2017. And Carlos Correa firing back here at Cody Bellinger, reigning National League MVP for the Los Angeles Dodgers, for quote unquote not knowing the facts, because he took exception to what Bellinger said about Jose Altuve robbing Aaron Judge of the 2017 American League Most Valuable Player Award. He, of course, defended his partner, and why wouldn't he? He said Jose Altuve was one of the few players who did not participate in the sign-stealing operation. I mean, I'm sorry, you're guilty by association even if you didn't. This is what Correa had to say. He said, and I quote, "The few times that the trash can was banged without his consent and he would go inside the clubhouse and inside the dugout to whoever was banging the trash can and he would get pissed." So Carlos Correa's claim, of course, is backed by data collected about the sign-stealing scandal by an Astros fan. And Jose Altuve, according to the research, heard the fewest amount of trash can bangs of any of the Astros hitters during the regular season in 2017. And Carlos Correa also explained why Jose Altuve was kind of adamant about keeping his jersey on following his walk-off home run against the Yankees last year in the 2019 ALCS. He said, obviously, this is a popular, albeit unfounded theory in baseball that the Astros used buzzers and had a system that Altuve was wearing the device at the time. But Correa said that there were two reasons why Altuve didn't want his jersey ripped off. Now, remember, Jose Altuve gave Ken Rosenthal like three different answers in a span of 5 seconds. He laughed very awkwardly and very hesitantly, very nervously, you could say, when he was asked the question, asked him to repeat the question. He goes, I don't know. The last time I did that, my wife got really mad at me. The reasons that Correa gave, obviously, Altuve's wife had objected to the practice earlier in the season. She doesn't like his jersey ripped off, which is bogus to me. And number two being that Altuve had a progress, in-progress tattoo. It was a tattoo that was unfinished on his collarbone that, quote-unquote, honestly looked terrible. I guess he was trying to be funny. I mean, really? Here's what he said exactly. He said, so, one, he didn't want to take off his shirt because his wife had told my wife earlier in the year for me not to do that. So he was telling me not to do it. And number two, he had an unfinished tattoo that looked kind of bad, that he didn't want people to see and people to talk about. That was the reason. That's what's on your mind when you're rounding third base to send your team to the World Series. You just hit the biggest home run of your professional baseball career, your baseball career in general. And that's what you're thinking about, your unfinished tattoo and what your wife said. I mean, let's not overlook that history was made on Saturday, as never before has a player's defense of his teammate's integrity involved publicity for torching him for a bad tattoo. I mean, true innovators, those Astros, let me tell you. But the most underlying thing throughout this entire thing, I mean, Chris Rose kind of blasted Correa for this on Intentional Talk on MLB Network. Correa said that the Astros deserved to win the 2017 World Series and that they won it fair and square. And, of course, while Correa said that the Astros deserve scorn and punishment for cheating throughout 2017, he pushed back on that idea that the team didn't earn its 2017 World Series. He said that the Astros didn't have the Dodgers' signs in the World Series, even though they were trying. They didn't have them. He noted that the Astros came through multiple times on the road in that series, suggesting Houston was unable to cheat away from Minute Maid Park. And at least one report suggested that the Astros were using the quote-unquote codebreaker sign-stealing system during road games, the one that Jeff Lunau had reportedly been intact with. And Correa said that the players had nothing to do with codebreaker, instead blaming the front office on that one. So Jim Crane takes no responsibility for this, but at the same time, Correa is taking no responsibility for codebreaker, blaming the front office and Jim Crane. So I don't know what this. I mean, Correa, of course, disagreed with the comments made by Jim Crane, suggesting that the team may have not have benefited from stealing signs. So there's that. He said that the Astros gained an advantage from the scheme. He also said that Crane likely didn't understand it because Jim Crane doesn't play baseball and isn't around the game as much as the players or the media members. It's really interesting interview. And the interview snippet, of course, ends with Carlos Correa saying, "What happened in 2017 does not define us." He expressed optimism that the Astros will win a lot of games in 2020, and I'm sure they will, and that the team's success wasn't a product of the sign-stealing scandal. So I'll believe that when I see it, but that's what Carlos Correa had to say. I mean, how could you say that you won the World Series fair and square when you cheated the entire season? If you cheat once during that season, let's say you cheated on April 13th of 2017, that is not a World Series won fair and square. You had an advantage this entire season. At least admit it. I mean, Mike Rizzo, the Washington Nationals general manager, said it. I want to hear them say the word cheated. That'll make things a lot better for me. That'll make a lot. It won't clear things up with the players and the players' union. It'll be interesting to see what Tony Clark and Rob Manfred have in store here in the next couple of weeks, trying to clean this all up, because it ain't going away, not in the long shot. So I wanted to get into our Friday interview of the week, flashback Friday interview of the week, with the guy who kind of started this whole thing. It was the video that was brought to Rob Manfred via John Boy Media with the trash cans. John Boy, the founder of John Boy Media, host of Talking Yanks and Talking Baseball with Jake Storiel. We talked back in 2000, I think this was in 2018, after the Yankees got eliminated from that postseason against the Red Sox, which is now up in the air because they may have cheated. I mean, the one argument being made here is that if you're going to strip the Astros of their 2017 World Series, you're probably going to have to strip the Red Sox of their World Series. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this Boston Red Sox sign-stealing investigation coming out in a few weeks. But Jimmy O'Brien, John Boy, and I talked about the Yankees' season going into 2019. We talked about Talking Yanks, talked about his early success with John Boy Media. So let's talk to John Boy, Jimmy O'Brien, here on the O's Show after this quick word from TickPick. What I want to know, do you think that if they go after Machado this year, he plays short for the majority of the year, maybe moves over to third when Didi gets back late in the year, I don't know. Do you think the Yankees would want to re-sign Didi given how important he's been to the team over the past several years?
Yeah, that's very interesting because it's a big-time fan versus business pull, and how much does the business have to support the fan? Because Didi feels like a fabric of this team. He was here for the transition, and he kind of embodies the transition from like the older Yankees to the new young core, because he was there. He got booed. People cheered Cheater in his face when he made errors. He had a really tough time, and now he's emerged as a leader. So he's been here. I think he's like in the fabric of Yankee fans. We love Didi. But the way the game is, young guys with big contracts is what is valued the most. So from a business standpoint, I don't know if it makes sense to pay Didi $20 million to play shortstop when you'd be paying, you know, if Glaber slides over, he's basically free, and then you know what I mean? So I hope they extend Didi, they bring him back, because I am a fan, but I do think that Didi situation, when he is up, especially coming off injury now, is going to be very interesting. Does the business side have to cater to the fan money-wise and clubhouse-wise? You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, you can't not turn down a guy like Manny Machado, given how talented he is. And at the same time, everybody talks about Aaron Judge being like the biggest leader on the team, and they should. He probably is. But Didi Gregorius is also up there as one of their top leaders in that clubhouse. He was there during the years where you had McCann and Ellsbury and Beltran with the so-called rebuilding years, even though they weren't really rebuilding years. They were right back in it last year. But that's a big part, a big chunk of the heart of the Yankees that they'd be letting go. No, definitely, they should definitely go after pitching more. I mean, you saw it in the ALDS. They just could not contend after the Red Sox just started bashing, especially in Game 3. That begs the question. You said a lot. They have a lot of right-handed bats in the lineup. Judge, Giancarlo, Andujar, Torres. If they added Goldschmidt, do you go out and get a guy like Bryce Harper, given that he's a lefty with a short porch in right field, and also given how he's probably going to commend a $300 million deal?
Yeah, I think Harper makes more sense than Machado for the Yankees. He's a lefty. He can go in between all our righties. We have the short porch. He can play left field, which will be open if they pass on Gardy, which you would pass on Gardy or bring him back as a bench player if you land Harper. So I think Harper makes sense. He's the lefty part and all that. But the money-wise, I don't know how they're going to have to configure it, because I got to believe that they're going to want to be under the tax, so the luxury tax is every 3 years, so they're under right now. So the next 2 years they can go over. I don't know if they're going to do the contract so that they are under again in 3 years, or will they, you know, if you're over on the third year, you pay 50%. Are they willing to pay that one time if that means they have Manny and Harper for the next 6 years? We'll have to see. It'd be interesting. I don't know how they're going to figure money, but I mean, I know that some people get annoyed by this, but not my money. Go spend and get the guys. I don't care.
All right. Well, especially back then when they got like CC, Burnett, Teixeira, they didn't really have a farm system. So they kind of had no choice to go out and sign all those big guys and go over the luxury tax. As where now, all of these guys, it's probably the biggest free agent list in history, and you got one of the best farm systems in baseball, too. So
yeah,
it'll.
And you have the MLB talent is on their rookie contracts. I mean, Judge, Gary, Severino, Glaber, Andujar, they're all still haven't gotten their first payday, which is what Didi's coming up on, and why that question is kind of interesting. But so the Yankees are set up perfect right now. They have a bunch of rookies at their core that they're not paying a ton of money. They have a bunch of prospects that are just as good as cash for trade pieces. Then they have a ton of cash to go get these veterans and sprinkle in. I mean, this should be a very successful and a very big offseason for the Yankees. And I think they've been planning it since they started the rebuild in 2016. Really, when they lost in 2015 in the wild card, I think 2019, 2020 were the we're going to contend years, because they had no idea the rebuild was going to work in 2017 and 2018. And it's why we've seen them be much more big on shedding contracts, trading Warren for nothing, trading Headley for nothing, and trading Castro as part of the deal. They've been much bigger on shedding contracts than they have been on adding the players and the free agents that we were hoping they would to help this 2018 team. And I think that's because 2019 has always been the main agenda.
What do you think about Patrick Corbin from the Diamondbacks?
I think it makes too much sense, right? There's sometimes where JD to Boston last year, there's some moves that just make so much sense, and I think Corbin to the Yankees feels like one of those. Obviously, I have a very big Yankee bias, so I wonder if there's a Diamondbacks fan that's like, no, the obvious move is he's going here. It's like, well, okay. But to me, it seems obvious. It seems like it's likely to happen. Lefty pitcher, young guy, youngish guy, from the area, not that that matters. On R2C2 podcast, CC Sabathia said that pitching in your hometown or playing for your hometown is actually worse. So hopefully that doesn't hurt. But I think it makes sense for the Yankees to go after him, and I think it makes sense for him to come here. So I like that.
I go to school out here in Arizona. I work for the Diamondbacks in ticket sales over the summer, so I got to see most of his starts at Chase Field. The guy's fucking awesome. I'm a big supporter of Patrick Corbin. He was lights out. I mean, the NL West is a totally different jungle compared to the AL East, of course, when you got the Red Sox and the up-and-coming Rays. I'm for sure going to jump on that Patrick Corbin train if Brian Cashman wants to go get him.
News out in Arizona. Is there other teams? Are there big interests? Does it seem like Yankees is a move for you, for people out there as well?
Oh, obviously seems like the biggest choice for him right now, the best choice. Too perfectly. The Diamondbacks don't seem like they're going to re-sign anybody. I mean, we talked about they're going to get rid of Goldschmidt. Pollock's a free agent. I think they're just cleaning house right now, which I don't know why.
Everyone's eager to lose in the MLB.
Is it the end for Brett Gardner in the Bronx? We talked a little bit about Aaron Judge and Didi Gregorius being leaders in that locker room. Brett Gardner's been there forever, about 11, 12 years now. Do you think the Yankees go out and re-sign him on a one-year deal, or do you think his time in the Bronx is up?
So Brett Gardner has an option, a team option for 2019. I think it's $10 million for the year. What I think would happen, I don't think the Yankees are going to pick up that option because Brett Gardner's getting older. Some people act like he's really old. He's like 34. He's not 38. But he's getting older. He's coming off his worst full season as a professional. The leadership's good. The defense is good. But I don't know if he's worth $10 million for 1 year as a potential bench fourth outfielder. What they may do is deny the option and then try to sign him for less, but you take the big gamble that other teams are going to give him 10. But if it's anything like the free agent market we saw last year, it doesn't really look good for Gardner, because anyone over 32 had to do, you know, what Neil Walker had to do, and get signed really late and have a really late spring training and then have that affect your season. I hope it's not the end. I like Brett Gardner. I never was a big Brett Gardner fan, but in these last couple of years, I don't think it'd be hard to not appreciate what he does for the clubhouse and for the guys and for just the tenacity he brings every day on the field. But offensively, he didn't have a great year. I'd like to see him come back for less money, lesser than the option, and in a more limited role at fourth outfielder.
Right, because it's tough. He's been a leader in that locker room forever, but at the same time, you got Bryce Harper on the free agent market. You got guys like Clint Frazier and Estevan Floreal in the farm system, and I don't think you want to salvage those guys for Brett Gardner. At the same time, big piece of that locker room. My next question is, last week, of course, Game 3 of the ALDS, 16-1 loss. I believe you were there. Just gut-wrenching, sick-to-my-stomach type of game. What do you think could have prevented a Game 3 meltdown versus the Red Sox? I mean, I know Aaron Boone made a lot of questionable calls.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Boone has admitted he made a mistake. Hal Steinbrenner said that Boone made a mistake. Severino finishing the third, coming out for the fourth, it was a terrible decision because, you know, then he loads the bases, and then you bring in our second-to-last bullpen option in Lance Lynn to try and clean up that mess versus the Sox 1-2-3 hitters. It's so troubling to think about. Like, what a dumb decision and move that was. It's insane. I mean, I remember saying this at the time, and I forgot all about it, and now it's here it is. The guy's just so stupid. Just the dumbest managerial decision I've seen. And but then again, the offense didn't do anything. Eovaldi shut him down completely in that game. He was given the ability to just throw strikes and attack with such a big lead. Once it got to 10-0, I don't care about the next six runs. They got two of them off Romine and a bunch off Tarpley, or not pitchers right now. But I think it's mismanaged. It's mismanaged, but then again, we have starters that can't go three innings, so it was mismanaged, but I sadly don't think the Yankees were winning that series, whether Boone managed those last two games perfectly or not. The offense went dormant, no home runs at home, and the starters couldn't go three innings, so what do you expect?
I mean, I was absolutely shocked. Like, that was the worst-case scenario that could possibly happen. The Red Sox coming in 1-1 series at Yankee Stadium, rocking crowd, and they just lose both games. I did not see that playing out at all. I mean, I could have seen a Game 5 and losing in Game 5 at Fenway. I didn't see them taking both games at Yankee Stadium.
Nope. And it kind of sucks because they have two pitchers in Eovaldi and Porcello who just completely shut the Yankees down. For some reason, Porcello's a good pitcher. Eovaldi's, I mean, he has good stuff, but he just shuts the Yankees down. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, hats off to Boston. They have a good team. Their bullpen's not good. Their bottom of their lineup's not good. But they have a really good team. They won 108 games. It stings. It sucks. Because when we won one on the road, I was kind of happy. I mean, I was pretty confident we would win one at home. I didn't think it would be embarrassing as it was. But we didn't have any pitchers that could pitch. So we need to go get some pitchers.
Those two games, heartbreaking as they were, the 1-1 in Fenway, I actually flew to Boston to visit my sister in college. I went to those two games at Fenway, and you were saying on your podcast how it was kind of oddly quiet at Fenway, and it was in person. Like, I mean, every two-strike pitch, of course, people got out of their seats and cheered, but other than that, nobody really gave a crap. So, very disappointing.
But you can't say it because everyone thinks you're just shit-talking. And I wanted to ask, like, my Red Sox friends, like, hey, why was it quiet? Was that the TV? They can't do it because it's shit-talking and they get all defensive and stuff and can't answer honestly. It's like, I just want to know. It's weird.
Right. A lot of, like we said, a lot of people on the free agent market, Harper, Machado, guys like Kershaw, Corbin, a lot of Yankees on the free agent list as well. Guys like CeCe and Gardner, guys like you love them, but at the same time, you might have to see them go. I have a list here of guys to re-sign and don't re-sign. give me your honest opinion. The first one is Andrew McCutchen.
Are we doing if I want them to, or are we doing if I think they will?
If you think they will. Actually, do if you think they will and if you would.
Okay. All right. Kutch, no and no. I don't think they will, and I don't really... It's not on my priority list. That would be if, like, plans 1, 2, and 3 don't go through.
Right, there was a... I don't know what source it was, popped up on my phone saying that they were actually interested in giving him an extension in September, and I wasn't really all for it because I know he's probably going to get a decent-sized contract with someone else. The next guy on that list is a key part of that bullpen, David Robertson.
I want him back, and I think he'll be back. He just fired his agent and publicly said he wants to come back, just needs to make sure it works.
Oh, man.
D-Rop's ERA looks good because D-Rop's ERA never looks great because bullpen ERAs are so fickle and not trustworthy of a stat because he can go like, you know, 5 games striking out everyone and then 1 game where he gives up a 3-run home run. Now the ERA is bad, but it's 5 good outings and 1 bad. And he does get beat for some home runs. But on the season, his season's really good. And he's mixing up his pitches. He's getting to be like a little crafty old guy now. He used to just be over-the-top fastball that poured in on you, and then his nasty 12-6 curveball. Now he's going sidearm with a two-seamer and a cutter, and he's mixing it up a little bit, which I'd love to watch develop as he continues. I like David Robertson.
So another big part of that bullpen, along with David Robertson, we'll see how much money he commends and how many years, but Zach Britton, the left-hander.
I want him to come back. I don't think he will because I think he's going to command a lot of money. And I think everyone wants their swing man in the bullpen, you know? Like, everyone wants what Andrew Miller was in 2016 and what, you know, like, they want that, what Hader is right now for the Brewers. And I think that's kind of the way the baseball's going. And you bullpens are huge. I think a guy like Zach Britton will get a ton of money, right? That's my feeling on it.
Right, you just mentioned Andrew Miller. He's not on the list, but it sparked something in my brain. Do you think the Yankees would be interested at all in a reunion with Andrew Miller for the right price?
He's been injured, right? And then
right.
Not injured,
that's a big scare.
He hasn't been the same. The Yankees have such a good bullpen that if they could get him for cheap to where, you know, he's somewhat excess, which is crazy to even think about, then yeah, I'm hesitant to want Miller. I guess I would want Miller if they signed him, but I don't think they will. I think that's kind of risky.
Yeah, we talked about Brett Gardner a little bit. What about Neil Walker? I mean, he came up late in spring training, had a rough beginning, but really caught fire there at the end and was one of the Yankees' key players off the bench.
Man, I feel like Neil might not get signed till late in the year, in the season again. It would be really nice, this is a secondary thought, but it would be really nice if the Yankees get all their spending and splurging done right away. Just tell everyone they want, we want you, blah, 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 you know, right away. But Neil might be, you know, just same way I said about Kutch, but a couple guys down. Like, you know, Machado doesn't work out and all this, then bring Neil back. I wonder if he's going to have the same situation happen to him as in last year where he gets like a short spring training. I hope not, because that sucks for those guys. I'd bring Neil back, and I'm going to say maybe they do. I'm pretty split 50-50 if I think they do or they don't, but I wouldn't mind if they brought him back.
Yeah, I'm a big Neil Walker guy. I mean, there's an option where you could re-sign Neil Walker, put him at second, and move Glaber over to short if you don't go out and get a Manny Machado. But we'll see about that. The last two people on this list, two key factors to their postseason run, the first being, of course, J.A. Happ, who was 7-0 in the regular season, but, of course, everybody's going to remember that ALDS game one start in Fenway where he didn't make it out of the second or the third inning.
Yeah, bring Happ back. I would like to bring Happ back. We only have 2 starting pitchers. We only have Severino and Tanaka right now going into 2019. 2. I mean, Seppi's, dog's been crazy. Seppi's kind of a question mark, too. So we need pitchers. So go get Corbin, bring Happ back, and then, I don't know, let's get another one, too.
Yeah, I don't think Hap's going to command that much money either. I mean, he's going to be 35, I think. So
yeah,
that much.
Like he seemed like he liked it here. Oh, I forgot how much that Zach Britton liked being a Yankee because they took care of the family and the kids and all that.
Oh, right.
He said that, you know, the Yankees had a daycare and they didn't charge for the wife's suite. And in Baltimore, they didn't have a daycare and they charged for the wife's suite. Like, he liked all that stuff, so maybe Zach Britton will want to come back.
Yeah, a lot of questions to be answered on the free agent market for Brian Cashman. The last one on this list is he's been with the Yankees for over a decade, did not have it in game 4 of the Yankees elimination game. CC Sabathia just had knee surgery, so I'm a little optimistic about this one. What's your take on CC Sabathia?
I don't think he's going to come back. And that sucks. And I don't know if I want him to come back. And that sucks too, because I want him back. His stats are good this year, but I mean, the stats are good, but I wouldn't say it was a good season just from remembering starts and all that. The stats are good, but and we say, like, you know, he gives you 5 innings, 1 earned run or something like that, twice through the lineup, and that's good for your 5, but I kind of want higher standards than that. Like, we need pitching so bad. The clubhouse changes, he is a leader. So if they bring him back, I'd be happy because I love CC. He's one of my favorite Yankees. But another knee surgery, I don't know. I'm like tug of war with my own heart if I think they should or not.
Oh, yeah, I know. Especially you got Sabathia and Gardner. I mean, Judge is your quote-unquote leader right now, but he's only going to be 3 years in at this point. You got guys like CC and Gardner who have been with the club for over a decade. They have more experience, great clubhouse guys as opposed to just the baseball aspect of it, so it's going to be tough. So I have a list of 5 guys here who you trade or wouldn't trade, and do you think the Yankees would trade them? The first being, of course, first baseman Greg Bird.
No, I wouldn't trade him because his value is so low when his ceiling is so high. The risk that you don't get anything worthwhile back, but then you go watch him be a star somewhere else is really high. It's kind of like, you know, the Twins remembering the J.R. Murphy for Hicks trade. That's what it would be like if we traded Bird. It would be like, you know, and he's costing the Yankees nothing. He's on a rookie contract, and he has options. The Yankees can stash him in AAA next year until he gets hot, if he ever gets hot. Or if he gets hot in AAA, then they can try and trade him at a higher value. I think moving him now, that's just not smart business. Cashman rarely sells low on players.
Right. Like you said, I'd probably trade Greg Bird, but maybe later on in the season if he catches fire in AAA, because I just don't think he's ever lived up to any of the expectations in New York. Like, 2017, he was penciled in for 30-90, and he played under 30 games during the year, and then he got hot during the playoffs last year as one of their hottest hitters, and then he just didn't show up in 2018, so we'll see.
I will defend him in 2017. They made him play on a broken bone for 30 games, and then they made him sit around and try to rehab for 30 more days before they figured out he had a broken bone. The entire medical staff was pretty inept. They didn't find a broken bone. Once he had the surgery in 2017, he was back in 5 weeks. He had one of the best Septembers of a Yankee in 2017, then a good postseason. So while his 2018 is indefensible, I will defend 2017. He got fucked that year.
What do you think about Luke Voit?
He's got like 7 years. That dude, God bless him. If he ever becomes like a free agent, he's going to be like 35 years old and then probably not get any offers. So, weird to say it, he's like never going to make millions even if he pans out for the next 5 years as a stud. Isn't that weird?
Oh, that's insanely weird.
Because he's 29 years, 29, he could be 29 years old next season and still have 6 years of like arbitration. Now, he could earn a ton of money in arbitration, actually, like, you know, a couple, $10 million a year. But yeah, he's never going to have like a huge payday. By the time he gets there, if he's there and still playing, he's going to be 34, 35 years old. That's crazy. But keep Voit. Don't trade him. Keep him. But again, that would be a Cashman move. That would be trading someone at his highest, whose ceiling is also, you know, who is playing at his ceiling. right now. That would be a Cashman trade. So I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be a little upset because I want Voit back.
Right, and of course, he had a phenomenal 2 months down the stretch, and you don't know what his rock bottom would be because he was just so hot in August and September. And, I mean, you got a take on that?
We don't know yet. I mean, the numbers that he's doing right now were the same that he did in the minor leagues. He was just blocked. The Cardinals just never brought him up because they had Adams and, I don't know, it was Carpenter, whoever was blocking him. So he was a complete hitter for 2 months. He took his walks. He battled really good pitchers. He hit home runs. He hit singles. He was, for 2 months down the stretch, he was a complete hitter. And, like, really professional, really good. So we have no idea if that was a fluke or not, if that was running on adrenaline, if he could do it for a full season. If we get help in the outfield and, you know, in the infield, then I don't think we need to upgrade first, and we can see what Voit can do next year.
Right, yeah, I'm all about seeing what Luke Voit is capable of during an entire season, as opposed to going out and trading maybe a prospect or two for Paul Goldschmidt. I just don't think that makes sense at all to me. The third person on this list is probably one of my favorite Yankee prospects, but has always had that injury bug in Clint Frazier.
I'd trade Clint in an instant. I don't think anyone will take him.
You don't think anybody would take him?
I think his value is super low. I mean, concussions are scary. I don't know, man. I think Clint is more of a distraction than a player at this point. I feel bad for him because he did everything right this year. When he was healthy, he was blocked. When he was hurt, he could have been with the team. I think they're really worried about this concussion stuff. You can't mess around with it. I think the Yankees are going into 2019 with Clint as excess, not even in the plans. I have no idea what the future holds for him. I think he'd be much better off in a different organization. I think if he was with the Indians, he would be in their outfield, and he'd be long, crazy red hair, fiery personality, with saying quotes all the time that are kind of cocky, kind of... confident in a way, and I think the Yankees and him don't gel with that much. We've seen him get into trouble a couple times and insert himself into headlines that most Yankee players don't.
Right, he came into the Yankees with that cocky attitude. The Yankees kind of tried to change him. Joe Girardi, I think, tried to change him during spring training last year. But yeah, the injury bug's just been with him since he's been called up.
Yeah, when he got called up, the AAA coach, his one piece of advice for him was be a good teammate, which
is
kind of telling. I don't know. I feel bad for Clint because he got, like, really, really rough end of the straw this year. But I'm like an old curmudgeon. He just bothers me for some reason. I hope if he makes it and becomes a Yankee and is a stud, I'll happily eat my words and root for him as hard as anyone. But he's like...
What about Esteban Florial, given the Yankees' outfield depth?
No, I wouldn't trade him yet, unless they see him starting to plummet in some analytics or whatever, because he's not even at AAA yet, I think. I think he was at AA or single A last year, and then AA, he looks like a potentially a five-tool player. I think I wouldn't trade him. I mean, we're going to need some people, and Hicks isn't going to be around. I think Hicks is coming on to his last year in 2019, so if Florial can try and take the leap in 2020, I still think that's a fast pace for him, but we'll see. I wouldn't trade Florial. I think he should be on Cashman's no-trade list.
Now, the Yankees obviously need pitching depth. They only got, like you said, Severino and Tanaka, and you got two guys in the bullpen. What about Justice Sheffield and Chance Adams?
I don't think Chance Adams... maybe he'll be a bullpen guy, maybe like one of these Swiss Army outgetters. I don't see him having that big of a future as a starting pitcher. Sheffield does, but I think he'll start in AAA. I think he needs a lot more seasoning, and then he'll come up maybe next year. I think he'll start in AAA next year, Justice, which a lot of people are going to be upset about, but I see him starting in AAA.
Okay, so last question before I let you go. I'm a big aspiring sports broadcasting major, want to get into broadcasting. I saw episode 153, I think it was, on Talking Yanks. You had Michael Kay on the show. He talked about how he got into his broadcasting, how ever since he was 9 years old, he wanted to be the broadcaster for the New York Yankees. Talked about his Twitter and all that fun stuff. I really want to know the question because I got to ask, how the hell did you manage to get Michael Kay on your podcast?
He reached out to me, which is awesome. We had a crazy year with talking Yanks and doing this stuff. It's the first time I ever did it. I didn't go to broadcasting school or anything. Maybe I should have. I tweet every game. I don't know how I got on his radar, but he reached out to me, said he liked what I was doing, said it was, you know, funny and smart and all that. And then I saw him in Oakland, said hi, and then later on I asked if you would join us. Nice enough to say yes.
Thanks once again to Jimmy O'Brien over at John Boy Media, kicking ass down in Tampa Bay, Florida right now. Just had a live show with Brian Hoke, as well as Mike Talkman with Jake Storiel for Talking Yanks, Talking Baseball. John Boy Media as a whole, we talked to Keith McPherson a couple weeks back in December. Great guy to talk to. John Boy Media, of course, looking for interns right now. So if you want to apply to be an intern this summer, for all you sports and media aspiring students out there, head on over to John Boy Media in New York City. They're hiring between 4 and 5 interns for the summer. Should be a lot of fun, a lot of great exposure there with those guys. A lot of interesting concepts, too, during that interview. Again, probably one of my first interviews. So again, for all you aspiring sports journalism students, take notes on how not to do an interview. But John Boy talking about wanting to keep J.A. Happ at one point, talking about how CeCe was going to leave, talked a little bit about how Didi Gregorius, who ended up leaving, going to Philadelphia, if he was going to stay or not. Loved hearing how Michael Kay reached out to him in 2018, and obviously now he was on the Michael Kay show a few weeks ago talking about the Astros stuff, breaking that news really with his breakdowns. And he also became popular in Yankee Nation, of course, when Aaron Boone savagely said that the Yankees were savages, no pun intended. So congrats to John Boy. Keep kicking ass like I know you will. Saw him at the winter meetings in San Diego a few weeks ago. The one thing I wanted to end with on this show before we wrap up is, again, just to come full circle on this whole Houston Astros investigation. We talked a little bit about what Rob Manfred had to say, what Tony Clark had to say. Just to poke a little fun here, you know the players are upset, you know the owners are upset, but apparently two Little League organizations in Southern California are also very upset because the Astros name as well as their logo is being suspended from California and Pennsylvania Little League districts. So with the Astros involved in this sign-stealing scandal, the Pennsylvania District 1631 Little League is taking a stand. So going forward, the league is suspending the use of the Astros team name. And this is what district head Bob Bertone said. He's advising all 23 leagues that he oversees not to use the name or logo. So the district's operating area is about 60 miles from Williamsport, which is the home, of course, of the Little League World Series. He said, right now in our leagues, the Astros are suspended. I think about our Little League pledge. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. Part of the pledge is I will play fair and strive to win. So this comes after two Little League leagues. Yeah, I said that right. Two Little Leagues in Southern California banned any teams from being named the Astros for the upcoming season. And this was according to Orange County, the Orange County Register. And the decisions were made in response to the Astros employing technology, of course, trash cans, cheating their way to a World Series title in 2017. He said, this is what Steve Claus said, the Long Beach Little League president. He said, parents are disgusted. They're disgusted with the Astros and their lack of ownership and accountability. We know there's more to this scandal. What's coming tomorrow? With the Astros, you've got a premeditating cheating scandal. So if Rob Manfred doesn't want to punish them, Little League organizations will, pal. So with that being said, that will wrap up episode 162 presented by Belly Up Sports. Remember to follow Belly Up Sports on Twitter at Belly Up Sports. Remember, we are still sponsored by TickPick.com. Use the promo code OSHOW10, that's capital OSHOW10, $10 off your next order over at TickPick.com. And Mecca Nutrition, use the promo code OSHOW20, that's capital OSHOW20 if you're into banging weights, eating steaks, and sleeping eights. Hit it, Hootie. I wanna get higher and higher.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.